Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hi, Paul.
Sarah.
Fucking shoot him already.
Oh, my God. Sarah just kept, for those who didn't watch the rewatch with us.
Oh, my God.
How dare you. But mostly every time someone had a gun trained on Teabag, Sarah just screamed, just shoot him already.
I just spent like 7 minutes just shouting, just shoot him already.
Just shoot him.
Just shoot. He's a bad guy.
Bad
you know what
person.
I mean? Like, I'm all for morals. I think they're great. And I really respect both
of
them.
But, like, there's no redemption. There's no redemption coming there, right?
No. We've seen the whole story. It's not like he becomes.
Right.
And actually, okay, we'll do the index and stuff. But I do want to talk about the whole idea of what quote unquote good people do and don't do. Because there's a lot of morality play in this episode. And I agree with some of it and I don't agree with all of it. Also, you did some really, really, really beautiful work. So I want to talk about that too.
Okay.
I can tell by your face that you totally agree, are proud of everything, and have no complicated feelings.
Correct.
So that's cool.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. That tracks.
All right.
Sorry. By the way, hi, everybody.
Hi.
This is episode 221.
Fin del Camino, which means what?
Fin del
End
Camino.
Of...
End of the road.
El Camino means
road.
The road.
Mm-hmm.
I just know it from the cool car.
Oh, sure. And there's also that Tennessee Williams play, Camino Real. Sorry. I saw it once and it was one of those like life-changing.
Got it.
This does not matter.
I don't even know. It doesn't matter. Of course it matters. All right. Penultimate episode.
Penultimate episode, which means the one before the last one. Just because there are every now and again people in my life who are like, oh my God, that was the penultimate craziest thing I've ever done.
They mean
like, that doesn't mean what you think.
I think they mean Paramount also. That's
Oh. Yeah. Speaking of malaprops, there's somebody in my family who used to say much to my demise instead of much to my
amazing.
Dismay. It was like.
That's so good.
I never corrected them because I was like, no, I love this so much. Much to my demise.
Oh,
yeah.
No, it's actually, 100%. It's not.
Is that not a malprop?
That people confuse. It's tantamount that people confuse with paramount.
Oh, yep.
Because tantamount means next to the top.
Right. As opposed to tantamount pictures. As opposed to paramount
Amazing.
Pictures.
Amazing. Yeah. Penultimate pictures.
Penultimate pictures. Okay. Would you like to do the...
Yes.
The Calstein Index?
Fin del Camino? Premiered on Monday, March 26, 2007 at 8 p.m. It was up against Dancing with the Stars on ABC and reruns of How I Met Your Mother on CBS and Deal or No Deal on NBC. 8.24 million live viewers tuned in. The episode was written by showrunner Matt Olmsted and Seth Hoffman, directed by Bobby Roth. Again, Bobby Roth directed more episodes of the series than anyone else.
He sure did. Okay, to recap this episode, I have to admit, I spent a lot of time screaming at the episode while we were watching it.
I can confirm that.
Unlike me, but I got a little unhinged. When we left off the last episode, Michael had left Lincoln on the boat, the Christina Rose, to go intercept Teabag and bring him to justice. Now, Michael arrives at the hotel where Teabag is staying, reuniting with Sucre and Bellick, and they decide to work together to reach their different Teabag-related goals. That came out. Moving on. They follow Teabag to a new location. What? Skip it. They follow Teabag to a new location and enter a house that's under construction, pursuing him and locking the company agents outside. But Teabag has staged a dead body in the house, of course, and called the police, setting them up.
Someone he murdered.
Yeah, sorry. Staged a dead body of
a woman he murdered.
Sex worker who he hired and then killed.
Murdered, yeah.
The police arrest Bellick while the others escape. They capture Teabag in the process, or process if you're Canadian. Throughout all of this, Mahone has been tailing Michael, but is intercepted by Lincoln, who wants revenge for his father Aldo's death, who, of course, Mahone killed. Meanwhile, Teabag escapes on the way to the embassy, and Sucre gets wounded, takes a screwdriver to the shoulder.
The old screwdriver to the shoulder.
Because this is what happens when you don't shoot Teabag the second you have an opportunity to.
Also, don't leave tools loose in the back of a car. It's very dangerous. They need to be secured in a toolbox.
It was a getaway car, though. They kind of didn't know. But yes, 100%.
Okay.
If you've got Teabag in the back of a car, make sure there's nothing, no sharp objects.
Correct.
That he can. Right. Okay, so in a final attempt to deliver Teabag to justice and clear his conscience, Michael is trying to take him to the embassy. Long story short, he locks him up in a different house with a different thing stabbed through his good wrist for the police to capture, and Michael leaves with the money, which seems like it would be great.
Except.
But wait, there's more. Elsewhere, P.S., while this is all happening, Sarah is facing trial for, among other things, letting 8 people out of prison, and is almost convicted until Kellerman arrives to testify for her. Prior to that, he had attempted to kill himself.
Yes.
But his gun jammed, and his sister made the argument that he could begin anew. And maybe him showing up to testify for her is an attempt at that. Anyway, Michael arrives at the boat with the money, only to find his brother gone. And he ends up talking to Mahone on the phone, telling him to bring the money and the boat in exchange for Lincoln, because Mahone wants to vanish. You guys, all the things happened.
Wow. Earth news.
I'm on Earth. I live there.
Same. On March 21st, former U.S. Vice President Al Gore told the House and Senate that global warming had created a planetary emergency, seeking to prompt swift federal action to curb greenhouse gas emissions, and everything's been fine since. On April 2nd, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, did have the authority to regulate automobile emissions of heat-trapping gases. And on March 31st, in Sydney, Australia, 2.2 million people took part in the first Earth Hour.
And in famous women who live on Earth news, on March 15th, the Ides of March, the Ides of March are when Brutus killed Caesar for, wow.
Yep.
I'm on one today. Angelina Jolie welcomed her son Pax into her growing family with Brad Pitt. Pax was adopted from Vietnam at age 3 years old. And then on March 29th, Rihanna released her single Umbrella.
Ella. Featuring
Jay-Z, or as we say in Canada, Jay-Z. The song went on to number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 and stayed there for 7 weeks.
Wow.
And finally, this was news that actually our intern did not put in the thing. I found it elsewhere, and I loved it so much that even though I don't understand a word of it, I'm putting it in. And finally, on March 28th, Sri Lankan cricket fast bowler Lasith Malinga produced unprecedented sequence of 4 wickets in 4 balls as South Africa scrambled to a 1-wicket Super 8 ICC World Cup win in Guyana.
Nope.
If you know what any of that means, we invite you to write in and tell us.
You ever watched cricket?
Nope. Oh, well, I shot a movie in India and they were playing a lot of cricket. Like in every empty lot, there were cricket games. Yeah. But I was told that some of them go on for days.
Days.
So, never watched it. But in the interest of not letting our index go on for days, see what I did there?
Yep.
We're going to cut to commercial and be right back. Or we'll just cut to a pause and be right back.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Okay, we're back.
Okay, we're back.
I'm going to start with you.
You start.
Because before we started the rewatch, you said, oh, it's my least favorite episode.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's because you knew I would spend the entire time screaming, shoot him already at the scene, at the screen. So why?
I didn't.
Let's unpack your feelings, Paul.
Okay. I didn't feel good about the work.
Why?
At the time, I remember, it just felt forced.
Okay.
I did a lot. I think that, and I heard Paul Giamatti say this great thing about acting on film is like, that he's made both mistakes. He's been totally underprepared and he's been totally overprepared. I was totally overprepared.
Oh, I can see that. And I mean, let's back up for a second. You read that episode.
Yeah. It's just like, oh my God.
You know something is coming, right? Because you're already on another show, right? You've already auditioned for Private Practice. Right?
I mean, they told me I was leaving. So yeah, I know it's ending. Yeah.
Were you already cast in Private Practice though?
It was right around then.
It was right around, okay. So you know you're leaving the show and then you get the script. Do you remember like reading it and how it felt? And
I just remember, like, you know, I think it's a really, really good piece of writing. I think it's not histrionic or overwritten, which can happen sometimes in those scenes. There's not a ton of work. There weren't a ton of words. And I just remember doing all this work to prepare. And it's like, and then on the day, I didn't feel that present, you know.
Okay.
And
also, very hard to do a scene like that with an actor you've only done one other scene for.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? With. I mean, like, that's super challenging.
And, you know, I just think, like, with anything in life, sometimes the anticipation of the thing, you know, I got a little knotted up. I got to say, 20 years later, you know, I'd love to. It was always one where I was like, I'd like another swing at that. And I'm not even saying that. I'm trying to differentiate between how it felt on the day and what I felt like once I saw it. I don't remember liking it very much when I saw it, but mostly what I remember is not liking it when I did it, which, you know, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah, it can color the whole thing.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, I wish I did. Not even like I wish I did this or that differently. I wish it felt differently, which also I think you learn as you go on and on, and that's none of your business.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you wish it felt great, but sometimes it felt great, and then you see it, and you're like, yeah, I don't like it.
And
sometimes it feels shitty, and you look at it, and you go, well, that's fine. I feel like it accomplished its purpose. I think looking back on it now, after seeing it, I don't know, God, I haven't seen it in forever. I'm like, yeah, it's totally passable. I wish I had, I don't know, this is a weird thing to say, more fun to do it.
No, I don't think that's a weird thing to say at all.
Tina was great. I mean, she's just such a great actor. I do remember kind of being saved by just get out of your own bullshit of what I'm feeling and what he's doing and da da da, and be like, play. I think the Meisner stuff we learn, which is the other person's more important, is even more important to remember in scenes that are supposed to be very emotional or scenes where you're, it feels, you know, like the stakes are huge or that your character's going through something enormous, which obviously Kellerman is. I think that it's even more important in that moment, being like, just look at her. You want something from her. And I got it. You know, it's like, it's a great, like you were saying, I think a lot of the episode is about, you know, can you correct? Mahone is trying to get free of this life and make up for bad things he's done. Michael is trying to make Teabag get him to come to justice a little bit, and Kellerman is also looking for, you know, he's, my whole life is in service of something that was, what does he say, a lot, is it a lie, or is he said, or
I think so,
yeah. What, and she says there's a way out. It's interesting, you pointed this out whenever that character was introduced last episode or the episode before, that it's interesting that they both do things that are service oriented, even though obviously very different. And mm-hmm. so that her orientation towards the world is one in a way that, like Kellerman's is no, there is always something that can be done. No, mm-hmm. you have to keep trying. No, giving up is not an option. And so that she's the very much the right person to deliver that message to him.
Yeah, I mean, and I, what's interesting to me is it speaks volumes that he called her, that of all the people in his life in that darkest moment, do you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. not Reynolds, it's not Danny's widow, you know what I mean? Like there, that he goes back. I don't know. I mean, the show has a lot to say about siblings and about family,
yeah,
and about that,
that's right.
The strength of that bond, and
yeah. I also, yeah. Sorry.
No, I mean, for what it's worth, too. Look, I understand what it's like to get in your head about a scene like that, but I feel like often those scenes, a lot of the work in them is actually done
100%.
In the season that leads up to it, and even the scene that leads up to it where he's so meticulously polishing his medals and his ring and his shoe, you know what I mean? Like there's this sense of, I don't know, I mean, of course I didn't, you know, I thought it was a lovely scene, I found it super moving, and to see him genuinely vulnerable,
mm-hmm. It's great. I mean, that it's a great piece of writing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that, especially on film, yeah, so much of that work is done for you. You know,
yeah,
you
from just everything.
From everything. You just got to sit in it and be there. It's hard. It's hard to do. It's hard to not, you know, mm-hmm. want to do all that work. And
well, especially because often directors and writers will make it a big deal. Do you know what I mean? It's like, so let's talk about this scene. And you're like, it's just a scene.
It's just
let's
a
just
scene.
Do our work. Let's yeah. just show up and tell the truth.
I also think that, you know? Again, like I wasn't that green at this point, but again, you know, I wonder what it says in the stage directions, but you can get the stage direction thing in your head.
Oh,
whether
yeah, yeah.
tears or whether like,
yeah, he breaks like, down.
He breaks down and we've never seen a
Stop
man
it.
Break
yeah,
like
yeah.
this, you know.
Right,
like,
right, right, right. Right, which is all written for the studio.
Yes, exactly. But and it's not,
not for,
for
you,
the actor.
But
it's really not
right.
written for the actor.
No, it's not.
You know, it would, for instance, it would never say something like that in a play.
No. In fact, the last time I read a play, I was like, oh my God, that's right. They don't tell you what
they
to
don't
do
tell you it, well,
at all.
Unless you're reading Eugene O'Neill, and then it's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess some playwrights can be micromanagerial.
Yeah.
But I even read a script recently that was written by a playwright. And I was like, oh my God, he's not telling the performers how to perform it. Mm. And it's a beautiful sense of trust. Mm-hmm. You know, you're looking at a scene and you're like, I don't know if this scene should be sarcastic or ironic or biting or vulnerable. And that's because we'll find it, you know, like on the day, which is really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I
yeah.
think, oh, sorry. What were you going to say?
Please.
No.
No.
Just shoot him.
No, you.
Just shoot him. Not you, though. The other thing that I think is interesting that's starting to happen is we're seeing the setup for season 3.
Yeah.
So it's, is Sarah going to go to prison and need to be broken out?
Ah.
And then Paul shows up and is like, ooh, is Paul going to go to prison and need to be broken out? Because he's about to admit to a bunch of crimes. Like, Bellick's now been arrested. At, you know, I mean, I think there's this sense of, hey, guys, if you're going to watch next season, somebody's got to go to prison, right? Or
right.
some, like, the show's called Prison Break. And so I think it's very clever the way they're sort of setting things up for a, I don't know, maybe.
Right. I mean,
it's like, this person.
Are you saying, like, we know that people, you know, it's going to be, well, I guess people didn't necessarily know that people were going to be in, I mean, there's nobody in prison in two, really. But
no.
That it's going to be, it's, there's so much teasing of who could go to prison. Well, that's really fun.
People committed a lot of crimes. And if any one of them is held accountable and there's a good reason, you know what I mean? Like, then you could build a season around it, which I just think is kind of fun. Like, it feels like they're playing a bit of a game with the audience, you know? Like,
yes.
Oh, you think Kellerman's going to go to jail for everything he's done?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. I would just like to point out one other thing on a serious note. You know, and obviously it's related to what we just watched. And I couldn't help thinking out of time and thinking about how much worse it's gotten since then, is that, you know, suicide amongst veterans is an absolute epidemic.
Absolutely.
We've lost more veterans to suicide than we have in any of the wars.
Is that right?
Yes. By a wide margin.
Wow.
And that's just a total failure of our government and our society, basically, that we send these folks off and don't take care of them when they come home. It's just an absolute tragedy. And I wish I had more information about it, but can't.
And a crime. But no, I think you're right to point that out. You're really right to point that out.
Yeah, absolute epidemic. Has gotten a little better. I mean, still awful, but a little better in the last couple years. I don't know if that's because the wars have been wound down a little bit, or maybe there is more help out there. Maybe there's more awareness. I know that Wounded Warrior projects have done a lot of, there's been a lot of awareness. I went to a screening of an amazing movie called My Dead Friend Zoe, which is going to come out soon. A friend of mine worked on it, and it touches on that. It's a very, very funny and touching, smart movie. Ed Harris is in it. Natalie Morales is in it. Definitely worth seeing.
You know, that's interesting. That makes me think of, and this is old now, but maybe 6 or 8 years ago, I went to a screening of a show, of a movie called Man Down, that was a Shia LaBeouf movie. And it's about a veteran and struggling with mental health. And it was a screening for veterans. A friend of mine was in the film and invited me to come. And one by one, these veterans stood up and were like, I've never seen anybody depict the struggle like this before, because it's told from the perspective of the vet. So you perceive the world through his reality. And it's only at the end where there's this sort of like sixth sense reveal that's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
He's safe and he's at home and he has no idea. And they raised a lot of awareness with that, but there's Yeah, we just have to do better.
My Dead Friend Zoe was written and directed by a vet who lost friends. And I think it's specifically about based specifically on one of those friends.
Wow. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
All right, back to Prison Break.
Back to Prison Break. Oh, this was a small thing, but I noticed when they got into yet another rad-looking old vehicle.
Yeah, you're loving the vehicles.
Loving the vehicles, but also I remembered Johnny Picture Cars. So there was this guy named Johnny Echevarria who I believe joined the show in Dallas.
Mm.
And his son worked for him, who I think was maybe also named Johnny. And Johnny was like one of those heart and soul people. Do you know what I mean? Just like one of those people who every time you see him, your day is better. And he's so unbelievably good at his job. And as we're watching this whole season, every car is so cool. Like, there's that station wagon-y thing with the wood paneling that Michael and Sarah and Lincoln are driving around. There's the Volkswagen that Sucre is like, bloop, bloop, all over Mexico. There's this, like, and I just, it's not something that, I'll be honest, I notice very often. But I was looking at it and just going, oh, I loved him so much. And I think he moved to L.A. with the show.
Oh.
And again, you know, it was just one of those folks, like, even when, you know, there would be days where I was just like sick and pregnant. And at this point, the crew knew I was pregnant, although my morning sickness by this point had passed. Uh-huh. But like, you know, I'd come in at 4 a.m. or whatever, and I'd leave when I was done work, and I'd get into my car, and Johnny would have like washed it and detailed it and gassed me up. And like,
oh.
It was just the like, it was just super lovely. So this is my shout out to Johnny Picture Cars, who is one of the greats, and I imagine out of the business by now, but we were lucky to
that's
have
lovely.
Him.
That's lovely. Johnny Picture Cars is also such a great...
That's how he was in my phone.
Yeah.
It's Johnny Picture Cars. So something interesting happens in this episode, which mm-hmm. is that Michael and Lincoln both refuse to kill people. Mm. And... kind of let bad guys go and get themselves in huge trouble. And Michael, in the end, does have to resort to some level of violence to stop T-Bag. And I just wondered what you thought about, like, what's the morality play in this episode?
Well,
what's it saying?
I mean, Mahone says to Lincoln, you're just like your brother. You guys can't kill, you can't kill somebody.
Right.
Which is, was it Karen Usher, the great writer for Karen Usher, who we had on the show, who said, don't forget Lincoln was going to kill Terrence Stedman. He just turned out to already be dead. So he smoked a joint in the parking garage. And then maybe he would have backed out of it. Maybe it was too much. But I think the morality play of it is there is, well, that they have a moral line that they cannot cross. I mean,
but it keeps costing them. I mean, that's what's interesting is it's like if they had both been willing to kill T-Bag and kill Mahone, two people who have taken more lives collectively than anybody
and
all
their
season.
Father. I mean, and you know, yeah, like Lincoln says, he killed his father.
Killed their father, responsible for Haywire's death, killed Tweener, responsible for Abruzzi's death. I mean, just like these are literally serial killers. They could sail off into the sunset and never do violence again. And it's an interesting, I think part of what I'm reacting to was my own freak out as we were watching. And I was just like, just kill him already. Like, go for the greater good. And Schofield's a better person than I am.
The Mahone thing is, maybe this is my own moral compass.
No, I know.
Feels more complicated. The T-Bag thing, it would be, I think it would be hard for me to kill another human. But standing in front of a psychotic child rapist who's also like I can't get arrested or put in jail and is threatening me and my family at that moment, that's mm-hmm. an easier thought mm-hmm. to take that person down right there. It would still be hard to kill a human, but T-Bag in that moment,
that's true. And I mean, I think I might be able to do it
is what I'm saying.
No, but your point about Mahone is a very good one, which is that he is a reluctant serial killer.
Yeah,
but he's still a serial killer.
He still killed
their
father. He still spent a long time trying to kill them. Also, it's not just they're not in a tribunal. They're in these people are posing imminent danger to them in the moment.
In a country with non-extradition.
Well, it's also like save yourself, dude.
Yeah. 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 I would almost call it a pathology in Michael, the self-sacrifice. And Sarah, too.
Like, is it a grandiosity or, like, what is that?
I don't know. It's an annihilation of self in some way. Like, I think there's, maybe they fundamentally both think that they're kind of unworthy or, I don't know. But, like, clearly both Michael and Sarah. You know, Sarah's like 12 years. Okay, I'm going to prison for 12 years. But that was the cost to get Michael his freedom. So
right, but she didn't know. I mean,
she knew she was getting arrested. Like, I mean, when she said
oh,
to him,
I'm sorry, when you didn't get on the boat, not when she didn't open the door.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, when she didn't get on the boat and allowed herself to get arrested, it's like, okay, well, yeah, I mean, you understand the bullet you're taking. And I don't know. I'm not sure what the show is saying, but I feel like it's saying something. And for all the times in the show where I'm like, yeah, I think ethically I'm on the same page, I'm not sure if I agree with all of the choices, because uh-huh. Teabag does go on to be terrible. Now, that said, I could have made the same argument about Kellerman at some point, and his redemption arc becomes really beautiful. So maybe I just need more faith today in the redemption capacity of the human spirit.
But there is, and maybe this is, again, my own weird, I don't know what, but there's something about Kellerman's belief in something higher. Like, he's never, Teabag is a sexual sadist. Mahone starts killing people, really, he doesn't believe in it. He's doing it to
he's
save
doing it
his
to
own,
save himself.
Yeah. Kellerman at least had a higher, felt like he had a higher cause, even though he learns better.
Mm-hmm. Although there's an interesting question about, like, does that matter? You know what I mean? Like, you kill people in service of something versus killing people in service of nothing. I absolutely hear what you're saying. I totally hear what you're saying. And my instinct is to agree with it. But then I kind of want to interrogate that instinct and go, well, but what if the thing you're in service of is Nazi Germany? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Because lots of people kill lots of people in service of ideologies.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We've turned this into a philosophy class, but mm-hmm.
That's kind of what it's a more, like you said, it's a morality play. I think that's great.
Yeah, the whole show kind of is. And it's interesting to see it wrapping up. I feel like I also remember some conversations with Wentworth around this time in the season about, like, I wasn't the only one. Yeah, just like, I feel like I wasn't the only one sometimes kind of going, what are we saying here?
Mm-hmm.
What are we saying here? And also, how much of this is the morality that we're choosing because we think it's the right thing for the show, and how much of it is we need to set up another season?
I think it's both. I mean, I think that what the show does well is pack these morality plays into this larger story. I mean, they certainly start. Let me put it that a different way. The show's good at making these little morality plays as you go along.
Mm-hmm. It is. But I think what I'm saying, and this is me maybe being a little bit cynical, is you've got a character like Teabag that the network and the studio know. The audience loves.
Yes.
And it's like, is it more honest for the police to come into that shack at the very end and Michael has killed him? And just been like, I'm sorry, I cannot let him out. And it's like, okay, now we have a character who's morally very compromised and confused, and, you know, and Michael gets to spend all of season three going, I took a man's life. I think it was the right move.
I remember in season four or season five. No, season four. Being like, because I had been disconnected from the show for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And coming back and being like, really?
He's still alive.
He's still here?
100%.
And now at the end of the show, they're really still not going to put him down?
Yeah. That kind of, I mean, just to be very candid, that smacks of a network saying, we're worried fans are going to miss this character.
Sure.
And I don't think we live in that kind of a landscape anymore. I think we live in a landscape now, thanks to shows like Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, where routinely audiences are like, first of all, you got to, on a show with real stakes, somebody's got to go.
Yeah.
And we're routinely going to kill characters that audiences love.
Yep.
As a way of
yep.
not only serving the story, but generating buzz and blah, blah, blah.
Speaking of which, Mark Haralek, who plays your lawyer, Marty.
Yes.
Who I remember meeting him that day in the courtroom and then telling him what a fan I was and that he utters one of the funniest lines in cinema history.
Which is what?
I'm not going to say it.
Okay. Okay. I bet there's a good reason for that.
Yeah.
What's the film?
Election.
Oh, I have no idea what you're talking about, but okay.
You know the movie, though?
I'd have to refresh.
It was like Reese Witherspoon's first movie where she plays the girl running for student president. It's an Alexander Payne.
I did not see it.
Alexander Payne movie. It's very, very twisted and funny. Matthew Broderick. And
okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I remember meeting him then. And then when we were doing Imposters years later, God, 100 years later, we cast Mark as the father of
the Embar's lead. Father?
No, Rob Heaps' father.
Mm-hmm.
So Inbar's stepfather, father-in-law.
Okay.
And then we had him for a bunch of episodes. And one of the things that I was adamant about when we were breaking season one was someone's got to die. The show is light enough that we have to make the stakes. And it was Mark Haralek who died.
Aw.
I know.
Aw. R.I.P.
He died a great death, though.
P.S. We talked about this. I mean, we mentioned it on the rewatch. I don't know why I have such vivid memories of that courtroom.
So do I.
I don't know why.
I don't either. And I remember.
Your entrance is, by the way, one of the coolest entrances in the episode, if not the season. Just the like, oh, shit. Like,
it was a big deal, I remember. And I also remember. Here's a question. Do you remember? I don't. Did we shoot that as part of this episode? And then, no way, right? They must have taken footage from the next, because in the next episode, there's a whole.
I don't remember the next episode.
As my character's on the stand, and you get freed, and we do the whole scene. But like, I always wonder, like, okay, oh well, there. I wonder if I just came for a day and walked in the room and it wasn't the day we shot. I'll bet it was, because you had many days or a whole day in the courtroom, I would imagine.
No, but I remember you coming into the courtroom. By the way, I'm so sorry if I'm distracted. My husband is like tiptoeing around behind us as
is it creepy?
We're doing this. I'm sure he's doing something important, but it's...
Tell him hi.
It's really terrifying. He's laughing at me right now. I remember it all being one day, the day of the courtroom stuff, and then you entering. And I remember it being kind of fun because I'd been working with people all day that I didn't know.
Mm.
And then your entrance, I was like, oh, I get to look at somebody who I know. I get to look at a character with
history.
Whom I have history. And that's interesting to me.
I remember... so specifically, going to meeting a friend for a drink at the Loon, at RIP, this crazy Dallas bar, it's a dive bar, great dive bar.
Ooh, that's awesome.
It's brutal. And
maybe RIP is a good thing.
Yeah. And a young woman coming up to me and saying, oh my God! I was an extra in the scene today. Your entrance was hilarious, and me being like, "What?
Oh.
Wait, what?
I hope not."
No, I was like, "What?" It was like
Kellerman
super
walks
loud,
in. There's a laugh track.
Super loud. I was like, "What?"
Yeah, no, it was
really
not hilarious.
Kidding. I know. I don't think it was hilarious either. And I was like, "Oh, what a
strange..." I wonder what show she thought she was
correct
on.
Or what, like what.
Huh. Yeah, no, not hilarious. Fantastic. By the way, as we've been talking, I'm like, oh, we answered a bunch of fan questions.
Oh,
but
we did. Okay.
Let's
read them anyway. Let's take a break and read them.
Yeah. Let's come back for them.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Okay, we're back. Mm-hmm. Let me pull up some of these questions because there were a bunch actually from somebody named Paul Garithm.
Amazing.
Who I believe is your number one fan. I mean, this is sort of what we've been talking about, but what does Kellerman's story say about loyalty and the danger of sacrificing personal morality in favor of ideology? Do you want to speak to that a little bit, or do you feel like you already have?
Sure. I think that's a very smart and succinct way of asking the question that we've been talking about in terms of morality plays. I think that what it says specifically is blind allegiance to anything.
Mm.
Is very, very dangerous. I mean, like you said, I said, Kellerman was doing something that he believes in. And you're like, well, people believe in Nazism. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make it okay. I mean, I do think that there was I totally get it, mm-hmm. that there is a simplicity, might not be the right word, a clarity of saying, I believe in this thing 100%. I'll do what it takes. You know, you're let off the hook to a certain degree. You don't have to make decisions about the mm-hmm. ethics of something. Somebody else is doing that. You're mm-hmm. executing, no pun intended, mm-hmm. the agenda. I think that there's a freedom in that that people find. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very dangerous.
I almost wonder if maybe in some ways I don't know if it's the takeaway, but one of the things that I find myself coming to as I look at history and current events and blah, 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 and folding this in is anything that requires blind allegiance is a red flag.
That's where people are
like, no, just do what I say. Put your morality aside in favor of mine. I would sort of say that feels like it's shifted from an ideology to a cult in ways that are dangerous.
That's right. I don't have to question this thing because my leader has said it's.
Yeah. My supreme leader says.
That no matter what they do, I will never, ever question them because I believe in them.
Right.
I believe in this ideology. So no matter what, where it leads me, it can't be wrong because I believe it, whether that's politics or religion or.
Yeah.
I think even some people, this is.
Or a diet plan.
Or a diet plan. Or to, in certain cases, art.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, well, you know, I did it for the the role. It's like, yeah, you don't get to treat people that way. You know, like that's obviously a smaller thought.
No, but
But
it's in the same vein. I mean, there, you know, for a long time, I think people got a certain kind of pass for behaving a certain kind of way because it's like, well, they're such an artist.
And absolutely.
It's like, but lots of people can be artists without being assholes. So
Correct. Figure
that out.
Right.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Paul Garithm. That was a good question.
Mm-hmm. I got one.
Okay.
Teresa.pan asks, Sarah, could you please say at which point you believe Sarah Tancredi actually believed that Michael had true feelings for her? What was the moment that Sarah realizes, oh, he didn't just use me, he actually has feelings? Can you identify that?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, very good question.
It would be after Rendezvous.
Uh-huh.
Right. Yeah. So season two, somewhere after, wait, sorry, your plan is to vanish with you and your brother.
One of my favorites.
What? What? And then she leaves and I wonder if it's in that hotel after the rendezvous.
The hotel with, when Michael's with her.
Yeah. So like in between meeting up with him the first time and then they're running away from Mahone. Mm-hmm. And he could have left her. If there was anything that was like, I just need her for blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. That's not it. He could have left her. Mm-hmm. Because this is also before the key, right? He doesn't come to her for the key. Mm-hmm. So there's this moment where I think they're in the hotel. She leaves him, gets into the car. And I think what gets her out of the car is, no, I think he's actually just here because he wants to do the right thing because he cares about me. Mm-hmm. And I don't have anybody else. And I think I care about him too. And then she stands up into the gun in her face. But I think that's because there's not really a moment, you know, which I like. I like that the show doesn't carve out a moment for mm-hmm. them to like have a heart to heart. And the closest they ever get really, I think, is in the bathroom
on the train. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we kind of answered this, but yeah. Marnie-16, Paul, what time at the time did you think Kellerman was really dead, or did you believe it was staged and he'll be back later? This is sort of a question for the next episode, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do that in the next episode. Sorry. Luke, you can cut that. Yay. Let's see. Some of these I marked for next episode. Paul Grotham had another one that I thought was kind of interesting. Paul and Sarah, when you look back at Kellerman and Tancredi today, how would you describe yourselves in one sentence? I think he means the like long interaction, like the arc of, I don't know what, how do you make a mashup of their names? Kelleretti?
Oh,
Tancrediman? Maybe not. Maybe. When you look back on Kellerman and Tancredi
how
today.
How do you describe yourselves in one sentence?
Or maybe they mean
the characters. I thought that's what that meant, but.
What do you think?
One sentence. Can it be a compound sentence?
Yes. Can be a run-on.
Oh, golly. In one sentence, I think I would say the pros and cons of a person moving through the pros and cons of the warrior mentality.
Ooh, by the way, I like the double entendre with pros and cons.
Unintentional, uh-huh. But I'll take it.
Uh-huh. I see what you did there.
I didn't, but yay.
I see what you did there. I'm giving you credit. All right, let's see. I think we've probably got time for one more. Let me see. At Planet Sarah 2024 wanted to know, if Kellerman had a dating profile, what do you think it would say?
Oh, gosh.
Ex-government assassin looking for redemption in a golden retriever?
True believer.
True believer. Let me believe in you.
True believer brings his own bells.
I love it.
What would Sarah say?
Dating profile?
Yeah.
Taken.
Damn.
Taken. This is actually, I kind of like this one too. At Ingrid_SJ, if the show had ended in season 2, what would have been your ideal finale for your character at this point? So if we say, show is over,
yeah.
Michael's going to kill Teabag, shoot the fucking guy.
Yeah.
Then what happens? So Kellerman goes into the courtroom. Let's take it from there. Kellerman and Sarah in the courtroom. We're going to give ourselves the grace of knowing what happens next episode, where he gives testimony. She's exonerated. What happens next? Ideally.
I mean, I think he's in the back of that van on his way to prison. And they come in with shotguns, and you think he's killed. but maybe he's not. I mean, isn't that such a great ending?
Oh, that's kind of, if whole show was over, yeah, it's like maybe show, he's in the wind.
Yeah.
Maybe
that was the company letting him out. Maybe it was his own people. Maybe they killed him.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. What about Sarah?
Well, I mean, if it's the whole show, you do want her to end up with the guy.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And I think after everything they've been through together.
Yes. Just him and his brother.
And his brother on a boat.
On a boat.
We're back to that fan fiction of Sarah and Lincoln bickering constantly. I think it's okay. No, here's Ooh. My fanfic ending.
I just saw a thought cross your face. It was so cool.
A thought crossed my face. So Kellerman gives his testimony.
Mm-hmm.
It succeeds in shutting down the company,
Ooh.
By which I don't mean everybody is arrested because that feels like a little bit much, but maybe Kim is brought down. Everybody else, like, whew, Kaiser Sose is into the wind, mm-hmm. right? They all vanish on their $1 trillion yachts.
Mm-hmm.
Michael and Lincoln are, as a result, exonerated.
Mm.
Which I think means instead of killing Teabag, Teabag's got to, like, trip and fall on something that kills him. And Michael and Sarah and Lincoln get to live not on the run. I think they probably still leave the U.S. Mm-hmm. I think they're probably like, yeah, you guys want to buy a place in the Bahamas? Mm-hmm. But they don't have to spend the rest of their lives pretending they're not who they are.
Mm-hmm.
I want the happy ending of like, no, you can, you know, be safe and happy someplace. And also then Lincoln can like move on and have a nice life and reunite with his son. And you know what I mean?
That's Those very things. Nice. That's very nice.
It's not very exciting, though, is it?
No, it is, because it would be lovely, the boat and the thing. And the
and the thing.
Yeah, and then them living
yeah.
happily ever
I do think
after.
Mahone should go to jail.
Yeah, probably.
I do. Yeah, I think he and Kim should be cellmates.
Yeah, instruments of the state in that way. Mm-hmm. Probably, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, because you do always have a choice to say no.
Mm.
And that actually, I think, is what's kind of cool about what Kellerman's sister has to say. Like, you have a choice to start over, and you do always have a choice to say no. Vive la résistance.
Vive la résistance. Appropriate on May 1st.
Appropriate on May 1st, which, by the way, some of you pointed out to me on Instagram this morning, is apparently Sarah Tancredi's birthday.
You said this. This is amazing. Happy birthday, Sarah Tancredi.
So happy birthday, Sarah Tancredi. And with that, we will take you to the credits.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for being with us today. As always, we invite you to check out our watch party episodes where you watch the show with us in our scintillating real-time commentary, which...
It's just me screaming, shoot him.
Shoot him. These are available to our Patreon community. Please join it. There's also all sorts of good bonus content in there. And you'd all have access to the show's Discord, which is a thriving online community. You can
actually is it's kind of amazing.
It is, yeah. And you can join that from the show page on wherever you're listening to the podcast right now or watching.
Thank you, and be good to each other in interesting times.
Yes. Also, Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul is a Caliber Studio production.
And your hosts have been inmates Sarah Wayne Callies and Paul Adelson.
And our prison warden is producer Ben Haber.
And cutting us up in the yard is editor Luke Singer.
And the frontman of our Jailhouse Rock Band is Paul Edelstein, who made all our music.
Did you almost just mispronounce your last name?
No.
Did you almost say Edelstein?
I just slowed it down.
Okay, fine.
I want the thing to catch up.
Right. And, yes, and our prison yard tattoo artist, logo, and brand designer is John Nunziato at Little Big Brands. Check them out at littlebigbrands.com.
Follow the show on YouTube and Instagram at Prison Break Podcast. Email us at pbpodcast@caliber-studio.com.
Join the watch party and our Discord community through the Patreon link in the notes wherever you're listening right now, because
Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul has been a Caliber Studio production.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.